All right, everybody. We are finally picking up on again on the Pursue podcast. Slightly different this time around because we're in Leverkusen in Germany, recording on site. And with me today, we have co-host Nico Bowling from Germany. Welcome, Nico.
Thank you, Kim. Happy to join.
It's great to have you. And of course, I think we need to present our guest, a bit of a German tennis legend in the making here. So
absolutely.
So let's hear it.
Absolutely. We got Tom Zeug joining us today on the podcast. Just finished his graduate studies and sports management in just 2024. So congratulations from our end here.
Thank you, guys.
Just started, obviously, your college career in 2020. Did a full four-year circle during COVID times. We'll talk about that later. But, you had a very, very good college career and, you know, finished with a lot of accolades, a lot of awards in tennis and also in your studies. Number one ranked doubles player in the ITA. So now ready to try your luck again in the Pro Tour. So
exactly.
Happy to have you join me.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, Kim. Thank you, Nico, for letting me be here. Super excited to share a little bit about my story because I feel like there's a lot of things that I can, you know, share with people who are like in a similar situation that I was in. And I'm just looking forward to share a little bit about myself.
Well, I think we need to go back to the beginning because, well, not beginning when you were born, but Let's think about the time in those high school years when you're working on your tennis, you're in high school, and you know, want to get down to, well, how did you end up going to the US?
Yes.
Because that was not straightforward.
No, it's not at all. Actually, that's a beautiful question because my situation, I grew up in a small village, Germany, in Turnigy. And then I moved to Hanover, like a tennis base, like an academy when I was 12. So I was able to compete and practice with like the elite players of Germany. And that was phenomenal. I was a good junior, played good tournaments. And I graduated my high school in 2018. And I was like, okay, now it's showtime. I go on the pro circuit right away, right? And I played these tournaments and I lost 4 weeks in a row, 5 weeks in a row. And I was like, what is going on? Now I finished my school. I'm supposed to be like, you know, like a pro player. I'm supposed to beat those guys. And then, you know, my whole year of 2019, it was just rough because my dad, he took me back home, took me away from the academy because I was just, you know, sad. I played so much tennis and it was just a little bit too much. So I was like, what should I do now? I mean, I could start studying in here in Europe, but then that would mean like the dream of tennis will be gone, or I try this experience going to the US. But back then when I was at that academy, the whole idea of college tennis had such a bad reputation. Coaches told me like, yeah, people go to the US, they don't even want to play tennis anymore, they don't have what it takes to be a pro. It was just had this really bad light on it. So I was like, okay, I definitely don't want to do that. I want to play pro right away. So well, 2019, I really stopped playing tennis. I went back home to my family, spent some time with my brother, played some basketball, like kind of found myself and found happiness again. And then my dad was like, hey, Tom, you should maybe look into this college tennis stuff. So this is where I reached out to. Back then it was Uni Experts, now it's Keystone. And I just asked them, hey, how does it work with a guy who is like decent level, I would like to play a college tennis.
I would argue more than decent level.
Yeah. Right?
I mean, it's a process here that it you know, from a young age, you've been going really hard
exactly.
at trying to make it, right?
Yes.
And
yes.
then you come to that kind of realization that, oh, that was a bit harder. Maybe
it's 100%.
It's not just...
There's not just kids in Germany who play tennis. I mean, I played tournaments in Prague, played tournaments in South America, and everybody's so good. You know, there are so many great talents, so many great athletes. So jumping back to it. So I had to make the decision. I reached out to the guys from Uni Experts and they explained to me the whole college process because I had no idea, right? The first thing they told me, hey, unfortunately, Tom, you graduated in 2018. You stayed the whole year in Germany. You're not eligible to play Division One.
Yeah. I was like, there's rules, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and this is where that's maybe a pitfall for some in your situation where, you know, your mind was set on, hey, yeah. I want to make it to the tour. That's,
exactly.
That's all
that
I'm
was,
working towards.
There was no plan B. That was the only thing.
Exactly. So... But there's a lot of rules
right. In
the college system and the rules that unless you research it and get a little bit of info or insight, you wouldn't know.
No.
These are stranger rules, right?
So yeah, not at all.
I think they become a bit more lenient in several sports. It used to be back in the day. I mean, I went back in 2004, and it was the rule book was probably more complicated than. Right. Also, with like the amateurism, and I think they've really opened up a little bit on not closing doors that they used to do on you know, you could try and make it a little bit on the tour before making the decision.
Yes, I remember the rule with the $10,000. Like if you make more than $10,000, you have to give all of that to the NCAA as a tennis player. And I think
you donated to charity, it came with a bit of penalty to not play right away. But I mean, the rule here was that you'd had a full gap year, which
correct
wouldn't allow you to play Division One tennis, NCAA Division One tennis, which was, I mean, you were at that level where you could go to the program there and play, but because of the rules, you would have to go there. A coach would need to invest a scholarship in you, and you would need to sit out a whole year. That means you just attend. You could practice.
Yes.
But you would go to school, but you wouldn't play a single official match, which is not a dream scenario for a tennis player.
Yeah.
Not a dream scenario either for a coach. So that is trickier. So, you know, you still could go to the US, but you didn't have a full a la carte list of I can go anywhere.
I was restricted.
Was your initial thought? Like, what was your reaction? Obviously, because you know, for somebody who had the goal of becoming pro, you obviously associate maybe Division One. That's the best. That's where I want to be. That's I want to compete with the best. You know, what was your initial reaction to that? You know, just straight off the bat, you know, uni experts telling you, hey, you're not going to be able to compete there.
Yeah, that's a great point, because it just goes back to when people in the academy told me that the whole college tennis system at itself is not anything good. But then they were like, okay, the Division One might be okay, but I still prefer you not to go to college anyway. And then it hit me that I can't even go to Division One. I'm like, oh my God, I'm done. You know what I mean? But then, you know, like I got, like uni experts helped me with explaining me that there is a Division One, Division Two, Division Three, and I like there are levels to it. And what I found out, like my 4 years, that the level is actually great. And it's some situations, we get into that deep a little bit later, but better than certain Division One schools, right? So I got offers from Division Two schools, pretty much the top 10, top 20 Division Two schools. I also got offers from Division One schools. But then I had to explain, hey, I'm sorry, I don't think I'll be eligible unless you would like to pay a whole year for me and I have to sit that year, right? That's what you just explained. So initial thought was definitely like, you know, sad and depressed a little bit too. But looking back on it, it was probably the biggest blessing I received, because the years I had at my school, which was a Division II school, was just phenomenal.
But that's a blessing in disguise then, really. I mean, I've helped some tennis players over the years, right? And I remember we've had the same scenario. We had a British student athlete. He was a phenomenal tennis player. You know, I think it was 850 in the world ATP. So then you're at the high ranking singles.
Oh, yeah.
But he wasn't really making it. His name is Manil Baines from the UK. And he actually ended up going to Oklahoma State University, which is a Division One. But I mean, he was so good. The coach had no problem. Hey, we cover everything for you, come here. And they had very good compliance at the school, you know, that the compliance departments are the ones that make sure you stay on the right side of the rules. So they were sure that it was only going to be 1 year of sitting for him. But that is, I mean, he opted to do that, right? In your case, it's more tempting to, when you did your research, and of course, you knew going into this that, yeah, it is Division Two. So the mindset was that. I mean, it seemed
there were some Division One options, but hey, do I really want to sit out for all? Oh, wait, you're a competitor, right? It's one thing to practice for all year,
but I play. It's just not tricky.
That's a big important point. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think especially for somebody who had a tough season and a tough year before that, like you said, you had 2019. Mm. You thought about just stopping, and you didn't want to play. You had a stretch of weeks where you just couldn't compete at your best. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, having the thought of, okay, if I go to the US, I might rekindle my career, but then also I might have to sit out a year if I go Division One. That might not be the ideal scenario for somebody like you then.
Exactly. I mean, every good tennis player knows that you can practice. You can practice as much as you want. You can practice with great players too. But at the end of the day, if you don't play matches, It won't get better at all. So
it's something different, right? Yeah. It's definitely important, and actually it really matters. Right?
Yeah, 100%.
But you're at an academy setting from young age. Mm-hmm. At 12 you moved to an academy and you move away from your family. I mean, that's a young age.
How was that transition
for you?
I mean, the first 2 weeks, obviously, it was kind of, you know, sad and new, and I was homesick. But at the end of the day, it was such an amazing experience. I mean, I learned to be self-independent, or like I had to, you know, do stuff on my own when I was 12, 13, 14. Like I didn't even hit puberty yet. And it was just, now looking back on it, it was phenomenal. Like it taught me so many good things. I was living with like 10, 15 guys who all had this dream to maybe one day be there and make a living out of playing tennis. So it was competitive. At the same time, we had fun. We had the same drive. And it was awesome. I mean, I loved it.
how many of those, your buddies from the academy made it?
That's a tough question, too. I mean, I would say right now, like, zero. Like, if you really think about, like, making money out of it. But we were able to practice with Zverev. He came to our place sometimes because he was one of the best players in Germany, obviously. Then Rudolf Moliker, I don't know if that rings a bell, but he's like top 200 ADP.
So he can, okay, so they can win. Exactly. But the more of those guys go to college. Exactly. That would have been my next point. Like we had kids who went to University of Michigan. We had a guy who went to Tulane. So, but that was all like people like closer to my age. So the whole college view kind of shifted already, but kids who were like born in 1995, 1996, some of them didn't even go to college and they started studying in Germany, and the whole kind of tennis dream, or they played tennis since they are like 5-6 years old, it's just gone, you know, because
the setup is just not there, isn't it?
But I think it's
of course, if you go to that academy, something you want to try to make it. I mean, this was the goal, or I guess everybody there. But there needs to be the plan B. I mean, in the end, you didn't have a plan B, but no, you had a plan B.
Yeah,
that you could fall back on. It ended up being that way.
But yeah,
surely it's important to plan a little bit so you can not run into that obstacle. So don't go sick.
Yeah, looking back on it, that was like the one thing that I kind of wish the people there would have changed, because they were great with kids from the age of 10 to 18. But if you're not 18 playing junior by slams, it's kind of it, you know. So that was not really like an idea or a setting what you can do after the age of 18. And looking back on it, I mean, with 18, I was not even as strong, as physical sound I am now. Some kids are with 18. I mean, look at Ike Russ.
Look at those guys. I mean, they are
specimens.
Yeah.
So when I was 18, I probably looked like a 14, 15-year-old. So I needed even more years to completely develop my body to get on that level, you know? So that's why I can just recommend everyone who plays tennis to take this college role, because there are just so many benefits that come with that, even besides tennis, the whole experience, language, the people you meet, the adversity you face there, and you have to find solutions, the decision making. I mean, I can go on. It's just, it changed me as a man. It made a boy to a man.
They're formative years.
Yeah.
But so you came up from the academy from that, and here should spend some more time with your family.
Oh, yeah.
You probably haven't seen that much, right?
No.
You've seen your family less than most people.
The people there, exactly. Yes. My coaches and then my players, yeah.
You had a second family. And in the US, they also talk about, hey, now you're building art. And so you have a lot of families around them.
That's true.
But so you get on the plane January 2020.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the start of your journey. But then you all know what's about to hit that.
Yeah.
All right, so January 2020, you get to campus. I mean, but why UIndy or University of Indianapolis, but we call it UIndy? Yeah. Why did you choose UIndy in the end?
That's also a great question. Well, let me go back to 2019, because the only thing I also did there was I participated in a showcase. I got in contact with the guys from Uni Experts, and they was like, hey, Tom, we have the showcase. We would like for you to participate in there to, you know, get your hands wet and just have the first interaction with coaches and just play and see how your level is. Because what happened to me was, since I didn't play in 2019, my ranking dropped because I didn't play any more matches. So I was like, okay, I got to do that. Participate in the showcase. I did good. Did what I was supposed to do. I mean, I've been playing tennis since I was four, so it came natural to me, of course. And then on Sunday, we had, I think I got 6 conversations with coaches, including University of Indianapolis, Hawaii Pacific, Flagler, and then 2 or 3 Division I schools, one from Northern Arizona. I want to say Charlotte was in there too, and one more, I can't remember. And they were like, hey, Tom, what's going on with your ranking? Because I feel like you play much better than what your ranking is. And then I kind of explained to them my whole story. Yeah, you know, I used to play in this academy, was good, and then had kind of a mental breakdown, and now I'm trying to get back to it. They were like, yeah, we would love to have you. We would love to have you. I feel like you could be a good addition to our team. And then I was like, yeah, but I have something to tell you guys. It looks like I'm not eligible to play Division I. So all of the Division I offers gone. And then I was just looking at these Division II schools. And UIndy was the one that stood out to me because the assistant coach back then, he was a German guy. And what was just funny is that he dated a girl that I went to the same academy with. So I kind of felt like a little bit drawn to him a little bit because, you know, he was German. I was able to speak German with him, not English, because back then, you know, I'm 18, my English is broken. I'm kind of scared talking to these Americans because we Germans don't want to mess up. So I take my time, I structure my sentence in my head, and then I speak, you know. So, and then, I mean, I had a great conversation with the head coach. His name is Malik Tabe. He's from France. He lived in the U.S. for 30 years now, 35 years. He's married. And what I loved about him was his passion for tennis. And that was like always my number one goal, or my number one important thing was tennis. And he explained to me, hey, Tom, we are a winning team. We want to make you better in tennis. We practice five times a week with the team. Then we do individual sessions. It was like a dream scenario, you know? And the facilities were great. Yes, people could argue it was up north, so during the wintertime it got cold. But like at the end of the day, I go there to play tennis. You know what I mean? I want to have the best possible environment for me to get better in tennis. And that's why like these schools in Florida, these schools on Hawaii, I mean, they sound great. But like I know myself, like after like a semester, 2 semesters, I don't know if I'm still locked in tennis anymore. Because if you have every day 30 degrees Celsius, yeah, you have the beach right around the corner, you have teammates who, you know, are good, talented players, but do they really want to win a national championship? So, I had a great FaceTime call with my head coach, and obviously he gave me a great scholarship too. And this is how I ended up in UIndy.
It's tempting, right? I mean, Nico, you had many options, and you ended up at St. Ambrose University in Iowa. Yeah. So it's only about 5 hours away from Indianapolis. I mean, that's maybe not what you had in mind before. I mean, you didn't know about this place. I mean, your decision making, how was that?
Actually, quite similar to what you were referring to, Tom. You know, I started the process quite late. So I was had the idea of going to the US and never really thought about, you know, how can I make this happen? And I actually got onto the topic through my dad, and he kind of led the way. So I'm very happy about that, obviously. And then, you know, got to the point where I was coming to, you know, recording highlight videos and all of that, got injured. I was playing second highest youth level in Germany. So I was a good player, but then very bad timing of things. So a lot of the top programs were out of the picture, basically, by the time I was ready to play again and record footage. I'm still ended up getting a lot of offers, which was great. But then I also had no idea of what it really meant. Like, I didn't know my priorities at that point. I just knew I wanted to go to the US. I was happy about every offer, basically. And I was just also talking to my family, you know, about the financial perspectives. You know, you always kind of have to weigh in different factors. And obviously, that's a big one for every athlete, you know, to consider scholarship offers. But then also wanted to, just like you, Tom, study sports management. So not every school offers that. So I had a lot of thoughts about what I wanted, but I also took my time, which in some cases I took too long. So there was scholarship offers gone, and it was just a bit of a messy process, I would say. But then also I found St. Ambrose, and coach was from the UK. So similar to what you said, you know.
Is that where you got your accent from?
Probably, yeah. Whole team was from the UK, so kind of just rubs up in you. But yeah, it helped that there was also two Germans on the team. So like one of the first things the coach did when he reached out to me, he's like, hey, before you speak to me, speak to our captain who's from Germany. So I had a conversation with him and just kind of got some insights on, okay, what is it actually like hearing from a player versus from a coach or a recruiter, because obviously they are going to tell you, you know, they're the best program for you.
No, that's huge. I mean, just looking back to my situation, because my assistant coach name was Kai. He played 4 years at University of Memphis. So he was an All-American too. So he was a stud, and he just explained to me like what college tennis is about. And it just hearing it from somebody I can relate to, it just, I don't know, it just made sense.
It makes such a difference, yeah. Doesn't it? Yeah, and then also, like what you said, that the language is always a factor. You know, all of us, I think, that are going and considering going to the US, our English is decent. But in the end of the day, you're still not, you're 18, sometimes 19. You're not very confident in most cases. And then it's something, you know, you're getting out of your comfort zone, and it is challenging. So for me, it was always nicer to know that there's somebody there that I can talk to in my language. And then if I have any problems, I can relate to them. So I think there was a lot of, when I made my decision, it was a lot of, I wanted to be comfortable, but still get out of my comfort zone. I, like you said, Kim, I never heard of Davenport, Iowa in my life before. And when I got onto the plane, I was like, where am I even going right now? And funny enough, I had the thought of just going for 1 year, you know, taking it as a gap year and just playing and enjoying my time there and, you know, studying and combining everything, learning English. And funny enough, I stayed 5 years, and, you know, probably if COVID didn't happen, then I would still be there. So
American dream.
Yeah. Well, COVID did happen, and that was only three months after you had arrived in Indianapolis. How was that? I mean, talking about, you mentioned mental breakdown earlier. Yeah. I mean, how the timing of that wasn't great for anyone, but I mean, for you, you're just, you finally got there, and then boom, it shut down. How was it?
I think just one word to describe it was just like a lot of uncertainty, because like, my first 2 months were great. I mean, I was new. I was fortunate enough that I was able to meet new friends on campus off bat because, like, you know, I love to play different sports too. So I made a lot of friends playing basketball. I made a lot of friends playing soccer too. I mean, I had my teammates, but I also wanted to get out there. I mean, I was in America. First time for me, I'd never been to the United States before. So I was like, okay, I gotta, you know, I gotta meet people. I gotta get to know how Americans are like. And so we had great first 2 months. We had our spring break trip, went to Texas, San Antonio, Texas. We played, and all of a sudden our coach was like, hey guys, looks like that this coronavirus thing might be a little bit more serious than we think what it is. And he was like, but he was just joking about that, everything will be fine. And then we were supposed to play at school. They were like, we got to cancel. We can't. NCAA said we're not supposed to play right now. And he was like, that's weird. And then we waited because we were supposed to play another school. Same thing, we can't play you guys right now, the coronavirus thing is spreading, we can't. So we took a flight back home to Indianapolis, and I think within 5 days, I was on the plane back home to Germany.
It was super fast. I mean, I was booked in for, I was going to New York for a short trip on the 12th of March, and obviously that was right when everything really hit the fan.
Yeah,
right?
I just took my first job basically straight out of college. I moved to Chicago. I was super excited, and then, you know, I was starting to work, and then you're all of a sudden, everybody stays at home for a week now. Yeah, like, oh, okay, then it's another week, and it's another week, and everybody's like, okay, what's happening? Because obviously, I also thought about it and had a conversation with my family. Is it safe to stay? Right. Like, are you going to be able to come home if things, you know, progress and it gets worse and worse? So I made the decision, okay, I'm just going to stay and wait it out. But yeah, it was like
you
said,
you have to stay there then.
Until my visa expired, basically. Wow. So I stayed about 7 months after.
Wow. Yeah. I never heard that before. That's crazy.
It was a challenge, right? I mean, we remember a lot of students. A lot of students dealt with this adversity very well, I would say. But of course, you're at different stages, right? But I mean, you had a first season that was interrupted.
Right.
I mean,
played
you played five games. you might as well have sit out the year and this played Division I in theory here because of what happened. But I mean, finally it gets better, right? And you get to have an experience that is normal. You go back to Germany, regroup. Mm-hmm. I remember it was such a relief when they opened the borders again, yes, and everybody could go out there again, because we had so many students just asking, waiting, us, hey, what's happening here? Yeah. I don't, well, hopefully it'll be fine. And then in the end, it turned out to be good.
That's a good point, especially paperwork. I mean, me being from Germany, it was kind of, it helped me, but like we had kids from Russia, we had kids from different countries where it's kind of hard to just get a visa like that. I got my visa for 5 years. They have to renew their visa almost every single year. And if they would just leave the country right now, because sometimes they go to US, they let their visa expire because you can still, you know, travel back to their home country, but all of a sudden they had to leave where they didn't even apply for a new visa.
Yeah. It was a lot of challenges. I'm glad we're done with that, yes, part for sure.
But, 100%.
But your first normal season. I mean, obviously in tennis, the fall season is a bit more individual. Yeah. The spring season very much team centered.
Exactly.
But how did you find kind of the differences of what you were used to back in Germany to the US system?
Oh, that is such a beautiful question. And I love talking about that topic too. But maybe just quick, after COVID, I would say my sophomore year then, it was still a little bit, you know, weird. Classes online, you had to wear a mask. Playing tennis, it was not like the whole college atmosphere that I kind of saw how it was in 2018 and 2019 when I looked up one of these big matches. But then in my junior year and senior year, it got kind of back to normal. And so what I love about the whole college tennis experience is that tennis, being an individual sport, will become a team sport in the US. And some people love that. I thrived on it because I love team sports. But there will also be some tennis players who, because as I said, it's an individual sport, who might struggle with that. But playing for an institution, playing for your teammates, you play for something bigger than just yourself, right? Because the way tennis works, you start with three doubles and then you play your six singles, each single's worth a point, and then doubles, if you win two doubles out of these three, you get also a point. So you can, if you get 4 points in total, your school wins, right? So I could lose my singles match, but if my teammates win, we win as a whole. And I thought that it's the best thing ever, because in tennis, it's, back in the day, it was all about me. I win my match, fine. I lose my match, I'm the worst. The world is falling apart. I'm like, oh no, I lost again. But now all of a sudden, the whole pressure of like, just, it's everything about me. Now I can play for my teammates left and right. I can play for this institution. I loved it. I mean, I thought it's great.
I mean, I come from team background, same with uni, because we kind of always had that, but obviously individual, it's, If you looked at our school, I mean, we were all, there was a lot of international students, just like at UIndy. I mean, we've helped a lot of different students in many different sports, swimmers, soccer players. I mean, that you also know a little bit from being at the same school, competing, or representing, right?
Exactly, yes.
But we would always, the team feel in the whole athletic department, this is not just individual in tennis, right? That, yeah, it's about the team winning. Of course, there's rankings, and I mean, you got to number one in the end, yeah, so yeah, you did pretty well individually. Didn't lose that many matches for your team and yourself, but the whole athletic department and the support for one another and for the teams, that was amazing for me. Because that's not how it is in Europe. I mean, you might in your club, you know, we have cross country skiing, and you have you know, bicycling, you have soccer, but it wasn't the same.
No, it's not
here. It's a completely different ballgame.
This is why I'm so grateful for the United States in general, because the people that you experience too, they love sports so much. Like the way they respect athletes, I've never seen it before. I mean, I went to an academy and high school teachers told me, hey, Tom, you can't miss that class, because I told them, hey, I'm about to play this big tournament. I won't be there for maybe 2 days. No, you can't. You got to show up in class. I mean, it's the German school system. You know, they're strict. I get it. But I went to the US. Professors literally asked me how practice is, if they can help me, if there's anything they can do for me. Super excited that I represent the school. it was so new and I loved it, you know?
Yeah. Just the passion you feel on campus for the sport is incredible. I think that was also, you know, my school was pretty small. We had a lot of athletes. I think about 70% of the students' population was athletes, and kind of everybody supported each other. Like there was team events we went to, supporting, you know, the lacrosse team. Well, I didn't know that the sport existed before I came to the US. And all of a sudden there's us, like, you know, 24 guys, most of us foreigners, supporting the lacrosse team, and then vice versa, they come to our games. And, you know, I think there was a lot of friendships that came across from that. Also, you know, for me as a soccer player, two of my roommates were tennis players that I met through just that, you know, supporting each other. And yeah, it's a great experience. And also what you said, the coaches, Stephanie and the professors, they are all supportive. And I think the support system is definitely there to be the best in the classroom, right, but also obviously as an athlete.
Yeah. I mean, they're still competitive and they still want you to get stuff done on time for sure. But like because they also keep up with the schedule, they know how many matches you have, they know how you played, and just knowing that somebody cares about us as a team, that's a great feeling to have. And we in Germany sometimes we lack that, because some coaches, they, you know, they're good coaches, but are they really involved in you, or are they just doing it to, you know, make a living out of it?
How, because I've been on the campus in Annapolis, and I came from a, I would say it's pretty similar setup myself, where the school I went to was a very good Division II school, yeah, meaning a lot of the sports teams did well, they were, you know, highly ranked, good level, and you know, we support each other. Of course, it's more fun when there's big games happening on campus all the time. But you in this, very similar. Yeah. It's a very good setup for Division II school.
Yeah. And now looking back on it, for my recruiting process, where people told me, hey, there's no way you got to go Division II, Tom. You're much better than that. And I had no idea. Now looking back on it, now I know how the level is. Now I know how the Division I level is. I can only tell people and recommend people, like, if you have the chance to go to a high-level Division I school and play for conference championships, national championships, it will be much more beneficial than playing for maybe a Division I school, mid-level, low-level Division I school. You're not going to have a great time if your priority is to be competitive and to win, right? So you kind of have to know that in beforehand.
Yeah. So Division II, you know, to compete to win a national title, which you, in the end, you were very close to doing that. You were maybe one step away from that.
Exactly.
Semifinals,
yes.
I think. So,
I mean, I can just like, yeah, as a team, we made it to the semifinal 3 times. Individually, I won it, the national championship in doubles, and I got runner-up in singles. But like the experience we had as a team going to these events where you have the NCAA branding everywhere, you fly to Florida, you feel like more or less like a professional, you feel like you've accomplished something. It's an experience that I would love for everybody to kind of share, and for everybody to also.
Yeah, Isabel, do you want to be a big fish in a small pond, or
that's what my coach small, said too,
yeah. I think that's a good point you made there, also like saying that you felt like you were a professional, and obviously you tried to become a professional before going to the US, and you said also, you know, at that point you just weren't mentally and physically ready yet. So, you know, going through the times then in college, you know, what was kind of the deciding factors that like made you physically and mentally ready, and where like to the point where you're like, okay, at some point you obviously must have also realized I might have a shot again becoming pro and like achieving this thing that, you know, 2-3 years ago I thought was impossible.
Yeah, I love that. So the big two things that the US gave me were consistency and accountability. And these head coaches, like if you are late to practice, they make you run. So every single day we had our practice, and they know if you slack in practice, if you don't give 100%, and they'll tell you, and they don't make me run, they make my teammates run. Because then I'll sit there, watch my teammates run, punishment for what I did wrong. I was like, no, that can't happen. I want to be a leader of this team. I want to help my teammates, right? So this completely changed a little bit my perspective, and this is also what I love about people from the US, that their number one priority is hard work. And if you bring the hard work every single day, if you are consistent, you have a good foundation to do good in life in general. For my sake, it's tennis right now, but it can be a doctor, lawyer, whatever. If you bring the hard work and if you are consistent, so many doors open. And I mean, I had a good record. I won a lot of games. And after my junior year and then my senior year, I got strong. I mean, I'm 6'5". I have a big serve. I won a lot of matches. I had fun competing, which is also another topic, which is important. I was like, I'm getting back to my groove. I know that tennis is what I want to do.
Amazing. Because I went to a lot of national, I mean, when it gets down to the nitty gritty, yeah. You're in nationals on the dance floor and then tournaments. I even traveled down to Florida with the team at my school to support them, the men's and women's team. And the vibe was amazing. And how is it to compete? Because here it's a lot of fame and glory to reach, you know, to the stages or the levels you got. I mean, how do you prepare for matches in those really key, in the key tournament?
What I would say is that, like, our team and our coach made that clear in the fall. You mentioned it earlier. It's more about like this individual tournaments, individual singles, and then the season starts in January and it goes into May, you know. And before a season starts, we have this meeting and our coaches said, hey guys, we have our number one goal is to peak in May and to win a national championship. I could care less what happens the months prior to that. I just don't want you to lose focus of our ultimate goal. So every day when we came to practice, our purpose was to put ourselves in a situation, match situation, semifinal, Florida. It's hard, and you got to give your all. So when we made it to the tournament, it was not like it was not really new to us, because in our minds we were kind of ready to compete at that stage. And I'm super thankful for our coach Tabe that he did a good job doing that, because as a tennis player, at some point your technique is at a certain level. You cannot get better there, because there's, you know, like look at the pros. There's a certain level, but if you can find a way to get mentally stronger and to be consistent and do it for 5 months, 6 months, you see the result at the end of the day. And so even before we made it to these tournaments, we were just ready to beat, to win, to just give it all. And
I think the mental and the physical side of college sports is something that is very incredible compared to the European sports, because the season is also so short. You know, it's really about what you said. May is when it counts. Mm-hmm. You know, for me as a soccer player, it was, you know, November, December time when the tournament happens. It's like, that's when it matters. And everything you do is preparing for that moment.
Exactly.
And it's also that mental and physical side of things. You know, I remember every preseason we had the beep test, which is obviously a physical test where you run. And as a player, I hated it. I was dreading it.
I don't think any soccer player has ever liked that test.
No, it's just
you need to get through it.
That's a fact. That's the thing, though. You need to go through it and you need to make it. And we had a certain level we had to reach. And our coach always said, like, the level of, you know, physicality is not really what matters at this point. Obviously, we need you to be fit and ready for the season, but we want you to push through. And that's the thing, like when your legs start hurting, you know, everything, you just want to give up, don't. And that's what kind of the US kind of teaches you in a way in different sports, obviously different universities. And it's always that hardworking mentality. Also with, you know, gym workouts and all of this, you know, like you said, you were 16, 17, 18 within the body of, you know, maybe a bit younger, didn't look like it, and you just weren't ready for it yet. I was the same way. I played as a center back and, you know, never had been to the gym before. It just wasn't a thing that we did at the club I played for. And that is a complete change when you go to the US, isn't it?
I remember the facilities at UIndy when I visited the NCAA, because the headquarters is in Indianapolis. So I was invited there to have meetings with them. And then I stopped by because we had a Norwegian player that we'd helped to UIndy, and I knew the coaches there well. And okay, well, I'm here. I want to check it out. And the facilities, I mean, again, back to Division I, Division II, I mean, there were really good.
Yes.
I mean, you have the track there, you have the weight room. I mean, you I can see you worked on your guns here. You're sitting here and you're
6:30 a.m. Yeah,
exactly. So you've done your part with that. But here we talk about the the resources and the focus on things that are maybe new to some, say Europeans coming over or any international student coming over there. But that's, it's more ingrained in sports in the US, the physicality of it maybe. What about, because you need to, there's this academic piece to this, right? I mean, just like you work with your physical coach, or maybe you did a lot of mental training, it seems like, but you also have, you're still doing your 15 hours a week with schoolwork, right? Your 5 classes. And how did you juggle this part?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely gets busy. But what I love about the US is that in my first 2 years, my freshman and sophomore year, they do the general education classes. So some kids don't even know, and I was in a similar situation. I didn't even know what I want to study. If I want to go into the business, into sports, maybe biology, maybe engineering, whatever. But in the first 2 semesters, what they do is you kind of have to take these general classes, which everybody has to take. Even people want to study like medicine or want to become an attorney. And then you can kind of pick and what direction you really want to go. So that definitely helped me. And then I took the route with going with sports management, because like, I mean, my whole life, it was all about sports. And I feel like I was drawn to that. And I feel like that is something that I could see myself working in as a plan B, you know, if tennis is not gonna work out. But during the week, I mean, it all comes down to having a good schedule, being prepared. And if you get things done on time, you'll be totally fine. Like, I was never in a situation where I felt like, oh, it's getting too much. No, I have practice, I have homework, I have this. If you're organized in the US, you will do fine. That's all what I can give.
I think
to
what
people.
What my coach always said is, you're a student athlete. You know, student comes first. You know, there's also certain rules about, you know, what GPA you need to have to be able to play. And so they took it serious. Like when I didn't go to class at 7 a.m. or 8 a.m. because I was tired, which was not a morning person, still am not. And my professor didn't see me there because of small classrooms. Right. You know, I was at an NAIA school, so really small. And my professor would let my coach know. And then that means, you know, we're either going to be having some sort of trouble or we're not going to go to practice at all. So it was always like that, you're going to have the best of both. You do need to succeed in both dimensions. So I think that's a super important factor for everybody to consider and to remember that you're there to study also.
Oh yeah, 100%, because there's just more than just the sport. And this is what I had to learn too. Like, my whole life, everything was about tennis. Tennis, tennis here, tennis that. If I win, I feel good. If I lose a match, I feel like I'm done, you know? So I only identified with the result of tennis. And I came to the US and they made clear, hey, you at a university now. Like, your class is gone too. Like, you have to bring A game in the classroom so you can bring your A game on the court too. And that really, like, you know, shaped me as a person.
So you ended up with your bachelor's in sports management. You managed to juggle both in a very good way. I mean, All-American, all these awards. I mean, it's nice to win awards, right?
Yeah, but looking back on it, my number one goal was to win a national championship with my team. And I'm happy for the individual awards that I won, but they don't mean as much as my teammates and as the whole institution. I have to admit that.
Came close to it.
Yeah, we made it semifinal, but like Columbus State, they
it's
beat us.
It's always Columbus State.
Well, for some reason, I don't know
always
why.
Always Columbus State.
They're good.
They're
Barry.
they're in Georgia. I mean, I remember driving to Columbus State 5 hours from where I was studying to support the team. And
they're good.
There's something about tennis at Columbus State. So they're always the main ones to beat, I feel.
Yeah, I mean, then I finished my bachelor's, as you said, in 2023. And now COVID. COVID is actually the one good thing that COVID gave me. I got one more year of eligibility again, because we only played 5 games, and everybody who was in a COVID year, I don't know how it was for you.
No, I was already graduated. Yeah.
Yeah, so I was in my freshman year and I got this year back. So I had one more year that I could use. And a lot of people in my situation, they use that one more year of eligibility to get a master's. I was like, I mean, that's beautiful. Let's do it. And then I even heard that I can use that to go Division I. So I go into the portal, and it was super helpful that I had a great senior year. And all of a sudden, schools like NC State, University of Tennessee, Gators reached out to me like, hey, Tom, we would like to have a chat with you because you're on the portal and we're still looking for a player. Great conversations with these schools and then university.
Here we're talking top.
We're talking about
school, like Gators. Top,
exactly. Like Ben Shelton. Like
Ben Shelton played
kids
there.
Who are on the tour now went to these schools. And I was like, so happy, excited. My coach was like, he was proud because like, yeah, Tom, this is where you can go to the next level now. You can
take
play.
The next step.
You can go there. And I was like, let's do it. You know, I got super excited, had a great conversation with Coach Woodruff from University of Tennessee. They offered me pretty much a full scholarship to play in my fifth year. And then my sixth year to finish up the master's because they only had 2 years master's. They would take care of my school, of my tuition. And the only thing I have to pay is housing. And I was like, I mean, that's the best scenario I could have ever gotten. So, you know, next thing, went to the NCAA, put in everything, all of the data they needed. And I got an email back. Hey, Tom, this is, you know, I forgot his name, but can I call you? He called me and he told me, the guy from the NCAA, hey, looks like you're not eligible for Division I still. I mean, it hit me, you know, I asked and he explained to me, well, it goes back to your year in 2019. You played more than 5 competitive matches. You lost your amateur status. You never sit a year. You can't use your COVID year for Division I. And, you know, the rules are vague. The NCAA is strict. I talked to the guys from Tennessee. I had a couple of conversations with the compliance from Tennessee. And I was like, yeah, there's nothing we can do there. I mean, it is what it is. We're super sorry to hear that. And
yeah, that's again back to
going
all the way back to academy and having the plan.
Exactly.
And I mean, of course, it's hard to understand the rules, right? But
yeah.
It's not like you can just fix it. It needs to be fixed on the front end.
Yes.
So that's the whole thing.
Exactly.
About this.
And it took me a couple of days, a week to like completely digest information because I was like, I'm about to play for one of the biggest schools in the US. I have one of the best schedule. It's going to be a big leap. But then it was my dad again who told me, hey, Tom, don't take it like such in a bad way. Think about all of the positive. Like one of these schools called you, wanted you to play for them. Like that always means that you are almost there, you know?
Yeah, so you're on the right path.
Exactly.
You know, even though you're facing a lot of adversity,
yeah.
You know, throughout obviously your college career, your professional career, and, you know, some setbacks, I guess. But
yes.
Then in the end, it still turned out pretty great for you then.
Exactly. Because then I was in a situation, well, should I just go home right now and completely screw my extra year from COVID and just start playing right away? But then my coach, Malik, he was like, hey, Tom, why don't you just do it now? I mean, I'm sorry to hear the news, but he was happy too because he was like, if there's a chance that I could keep this guy.
Yeah, I get my All-American back for another year. Who wouldn't?
We have another shot at the championship.
Yes, exactly. And I owed him that too because I remember as a freshman, I told him, hey, coach, I'll win you your very first national championship because he never won one. He came close too. So I still have one job to finish that. So yeah, he told me, you're in the office of 1 year sports management program. I was like, I mean, that can't get better than that. So he gave me also, again, a great scholarship. So I did my master's at UIndy, had another great year, finished number one ranked in singles. We made it to Florida again, unfortunately lost.
Not Columbus State again?
I was at Columbus State. 2 years in a row. Columbus
Damn.
State. Yeah.
Always Columbus
Trauma.
State.
Yeah. No, they're in our heads. No, but a great year. And now I'm 24. I'm about to completely finish my master's. That's why I'm doing this internship with Keystone right now, because I needed an internship for my master's program to completely finish this diploma. And then when I'm done with that, it's full focus on the ATP tour, and I'm going to make a living out of tennis. That's the dream.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So what has kind of playing in the US then prepared you for now embarking on this new chapter? You close one very exciting college chapter.
Oh, yeah.
You embark on, now you're on your own.
Yes.
Type of thing. There's no team now.
Not anymore, no. But I will never forget, or I will never lose this understanding of that there's more than myself. And back then, I just played tennis for myself. Now I know that there's always a team around me. There's always people who love me. There's always, even if I lose, people don't see different about me. And back then I was like, if I lose, I'm a failure is probably too much, but everybody who's competitive as a young age know exactly what I'm talking about right now. So now I know that I'll play for more. And at the same time, knowing that I have 2 degrees, a bachelor's and a master's at the age of 24, I feel free on the court. I'm going to give it all. And I don't want to use the word try, but I want to make it. And if I don't, I know I can find a job. I mean, so it's...
So there is finally a plan B here.
Exactly. There is one here. Yeah, exactly.
At last, there is your plan B. Yeah. But you have the freedom now to go for it.
Yes, I mean
that's and you have this amazing attitude around this. I mean, the energy you bring is
I think it's really cool. Amazing. Just how you've gone full circle basically right? You know, in the span of 5 years or so, just were really at the down point of do I even want to still play?
Close to quitting, right.
No, and then now. Giving it your second shot again with a great attitude, like you said, Kim, and just being really ready and really focused. But then also knowing that, you know, I do have a backup plan. Yeah. This isn't the world doesn't stop just because I lose a match or I'm not making it as far as I maybe could or could imagine. So I think it's a super great setup for you now, and I think bright future ahead for you.
No, I love that. And I can just recommend to anybody who is in a similar situation that I was in as a junior. And now college tennis, I think, has a way better light on it than back then. But if you have the opportunity to do it, go take that shot, take that opportunity. You will never take it for granted because there are so many positives about it. I mean, we just talked about it for like 40 minutes and I got me goosebumps, got me hyped up. I just want to go back again and do it all over again.
Do your PhD?
Yeah, maybe. But I would just recommend for every athlete and also parent to not push, but like to really like get your hands wet and just, even if you just do a year and if there's something you don't like, you can always come back. But I guarantee you that most of the time that won't happen.
Yeah. Don't be afraid to take a risk there and, you know, get out of your comfort zone and, you know, give it a shot. And if it's not for you, it's not for you. I think we can all agree. We can guarantee that it's going to be a memorable experience no matter what.
Yes.
Tom, it's been fantastic to have you on. Thank you so much for your insight into your journey. I hope and think you've inspired a lot of people that are listening to this.
No, thank you guys. So much. Thank you guys for having me.